Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
That is, of course, Stay Far Away, So Close, one of my favourite U2 songs. It always brings me joy. What doesn't bring me joy is realising the fact that this month marks 30 years since U2 released their 1993 album, Zooropa. I can't believe it's 30 years. Actually, I was going to check, was that not just 20? But it was an album that, even though it gave us hits like Stay, Far Away, So Close and Lemon, perhaps hasn't received the same acclaim as some of U2's bigger works. And here to explore the album's impact and its legacy is Dan Hegarty, presenter of The Alternative on 2FM and 2XM. 30 years, I'm sort of still in shock, Dan.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. I'm really only coming in here to, so maybe you can explain how it's been 30 years, because I can't figure it out at all. It's just gone like that to a certain extent. Yeah.
Can you talk us through it? Where you two were at this time in their career, you know, Acting Baby had been this world-conquering hit, but Zooropa was, it was just this, yet another kind of big pivot for them.
Well, I suppose if you go back just before Acton Baby, at the end of the Love Town tour, Bono said those famous words.
Well,
you were there.
I was there.
You're lucky.
I was there in the Point Depot when Bono came out at the Love Comes to Town tour, and they said they had to go away and dream it all up again. And my twin and I were inconsolable. Went back to Newry crying our heart out because we thought it was the end.
Well, in some ways, it was the
end
and a new beginning, because I don't think anyone really could have predicted what they would come up with Brian Eno, with Daniel Lanois, with Flood in Acton Baby. So it was a whole new thing. It was a complete rebirth. It was a reinvention. And it really showed a completely different side to them. As I said, I don't think anyone could have predicted that. It was very different to what they'd done before. And then Zooropa went kind of further down the kind of experimental track.
How did it come about? Because the album just sort of didn't arrive. It sort of had a bit of a build-up. They sort of eased themselves into it.
They might have eased themselves into it, but it was initially, it was planned to be an EP. Mm. So then the idea of an album came about. And U2, any album is a big, big undertaking. So also, they were in the middle of a tour at this stage as well. They had, I think there's five legs of the Zoo TV tour, which morphed into Zooropa. So the Zoo TV tour would have started in February 1992 and ended in 1993 at the very end in Tokyo. So midway through that, it morphed into the Zooropa tour.
How did they even find the time?
That is the thing, because the third leg of the Zoo TV tour ended in November of 92. Then somewhere between there and the next leg of the tour in May of 93, they managed to record an album. And I think there was a little bit of an overlap, because they were going into studio before they went off to do a stadium show somewhere in Europe. They were coming back late at night, going to studio. So it was, I mean, I don't know about you, I find it hard to find the time to do the shopping. Like, it's like, so they went in, they managed to record an album, and a brilliant album at that.
And and a really, for the U2 traditionalists, a very, very experimental album when you think of tracks like Numb. It wasn't what a lot of fans were expecting.
No, I mean, I think you can break down U2's career into many different chapters. And in the 90s, albums like Acton Baby, Zooropa, Passengers as well, and Pop were very much the experimental chapters of their career. Some people are big fans of theirs. Other people who are more leaning towards the Joshua Tree and the Unforgettable Fire wouldn't be so fond of it. But nonetheless, it's as engaging as anything that they've done.
And wasn't it as well, Dan? Like, I mean, they were in the producers really, really came to the fore. And I've often thought, you know, with U2, this particular phase of their development, and Brian Eno, you know, which it was a chicken or egg, was it Brian Eno that sort of kind of birthed them into this? But also at the same time, The Edge was taken on this sort of production role. So who was the bigger influence at that time?
Well, it's hard to know. Like, I mean, they'd been working with Brian Eno for quite a long time before that. It goes back as far as The Unforgettable Fire. So,
but it really, though, it was this sort of phase where it really sort of came to the fore.
Sure. And Daniel Lanois, Flood as well, is another very important figure in their experimentation, if you want to call it that. It's hard to know. I think a band just want to change. They want to engage themselves. They want to challenge themselves. And as we said before, to dream it all up again. They were mad dreams, whatever they were thinking about.
Mad dreams, but with really, really sort of, you know, the production values on it were brilliant. We might actually have, you know, in Numb, we might maybe listen to it just to see where The Edge's production bared out. I don't know, do we have a little clip of Numb?
Don't move, don't talk, out of time, don't think, don't worry, everything's just fine. Just fine. Don't grab, don't clutch, don't hope for too much, don't breathe, don't achieve or grieve without leave. Don't check, just balance on the fence, don't answer, don't ask, don't try and make sense. But don't talk, don't run if you can walk. Don't cheat, compete, don't miss the one.
I mean, it's not Dan Haggerty, it's not running to stand still, is it? But U2's work is always political, or thematic at least. What were they trying to explore, like the ideas and messages, do you think, with this particular album?
I suppose the world was changing. If you look at the Berlin Wall was coming down and things like that. And I suppose as artists, maybe they're trying to reflect the change in culture and society and things like that. But if you listen to what we just heard there, there's elements of electronic music, if you want to call it. I mean, I don't like calling it dance music. It's just too big a term. There's elements of hip hop in there as well, which hip hop at that point of view was a very, it was in its stage of infancy, if you want to call it that, certainly commercially.
So not the big juggernaut it is now.
No, definitely not. Very early days for them. So yeah, I think more so than anything else, they were just trying to move on artistically. And I think the whole social commentary and political commentary kind of comes with that. And you kind of expect that from a band like U2.
You do expect it from a band like U2, but they did come under fire in some quarters for incorporating the Balkans War into the later shows. You know, people have different views. Some thought it was exploitative, some thought it spoke to the moment.
Yeah, I suppose, and it really depends on, to use a horrible cliche, what side of the fence you sat on with that. You could say, yeah, I thought it was brilliant, they highlighted an injustice. Other people would say, well, politics, things like that shouldn't be spoken about in music. But then again, you could have the point of view, well, it depends who's speaking about it and what way they're putting it across.
Yeah, and they would get a lot of credit as well for maybe bringing that to it. What happened at Wembley?
Wembley Stadium, and this actually was only mentioned to me by one of your team. They had, I believe, they had a satellite link to Sarajevo. And one of the people at the end said something along the lines of, you know, you'll go away and you'll forget about us. That had a pretty dramatic and profound impact on people.
Yeah, and with a lot of stuff you two do, you had one of the kind of interesting things about going to the gigs is you might get unpredictable moments. Salman Rushdie, who was in Haydn at the time, even appeared on stage with them.
Yeah, but they had other things as well, like where they rang Bill Clinton during his presidential campaign. Now, Bono used to do that when he's dressed up as Mephisto, a devil. So it allows you...
I have to deviate at that character. never worked for me. If there was one that I would ask you to retire.
Oh, I loved it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it didn't work for me.
When you're dressed up as a devil, you can get away with what with the word that we know very well, divilment.
Yeah.
So... I thought it was brilliant. It allowed him to be bold and kind of do things that
an
you
alter
wouldn't
ego.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought it was brilliant. I'd love if they brought it back.
You weren't there at Love Comes to Town tour, but you were there at one of the Dublin Zaropa tour dates. What was that like?
Well, it was the second gig I'd ever gone to. So it was the first of the Dublin dates. And it absolutely blew my mind. It changed the way I perceived live music, the way I perceived music as well. And really, and I'm not exaggerating, 30 years on, I still think about that show regularly. Now, I do realise I'm a complete music anorak, so and I make no apology for that, but I do. It pops into my head from time to time just how amazing it was. It was, as they described it, or as people have described it, it was a sensory overload with some amazing, amazing music.
And the range, you know, of the songs. Obviously, we played a little bit of Stay Far Away So Close, which is kind of one of those quintessential kind of anthemic U2 songs that they deliver, which I think it's one of their timeless pieces. But one of them is Daddy's Gonna Pay For Your Crash Car, Larry Mullen Jr.
Oh, the drum sound on that song is just incredible. I remember them playing that live. And don't forget, these were all new songs. The album was only out a month and a half at this stage. So these were the new songs they were playing. And I remember
do we have a little clip of that as well, maybe?
A little uptight. Y'all in this fist.
Was one of your favourites? Yeah,
that song.
Yeah, no, it wasn't one of my favourites. I have to say that what I felt still the collaboration with Johnny Cash on The Wanderer was something that was just sublime.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where circumstance just. You know, again, here's a horrible saying, the stars aligned. Like he happened to be in Dublin when they were working at that part of the album. They invited him to come in. He had a day off. He came in. He recorded it. And it's brilliant.
Because Johnny Cash's popularity wasn't, you know, it had sort of ebbed a little bit at that time as well. And then he comes into this U2 song.
Yeah. And really, when you listen to it, it sounds like a U2 song to a certain extent, but it also sounds like a Johnny Cash song.
It does sound like a real...
But it fits on the album, which, and if you think about the two artists, couldn't be farther apart in many respects. And then what happened, his career in the years that followed, it probably is possibly one of the biggest comebacks in the history of music.
Because, of course, Cash went on to one of the Rubin collaborations. So he, until he died, actually.
It was the American series of the albums. He went in and he recorded with Rick Rubin. He did, he covered some songs. He covered, like, famously, well, he covered one by U2, Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, Rusty Cage by Soundgarden. And it just introduced him to a whole new audience.
And do you think that little collaboration on The Wanderer sort of helped ease into that revival?
I don't think it would have done any harm. I mean, it would have. I think U2 fans would have been aware of who he was, but they might not have been aware of how great he was. And I think as well, being featured on a U2 album, it is kind of an endorsement that we respect you, we admire what you do, so we want to work with you. So, you know.
I wonder, do we have it again? Again, it's one of my favourite U2 songs in that era. This is The Wanderer with Johnny Cash.
Paved with gold, lifted some stones, saw the skin and bones of a city without a soul. I went out walking under an atomic sky, where the ground won't turn and the rain it burns like the tears when I said goodbye.
I absolutely love that song. Dan, where does Zaropa fit in the musical landscape of that time? It's, you know, MTV maybe at its height. There's no such thing as a small U2 album, but where did Zaropa fit in? Do you think it has been overlooked?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think it's them at their experimental best. I think they went out on a limb in many respects artistically. When you think of where they came from, the build up in their career to the Joshua Tree, it was quite a number of albums. It was 5 albums. It was over 7 years. So they really worked very hard and toured a lot. And then to do these albums that were completely different, it was a risk. It was a really big risk. But I think
because Bono himself said, going back a while now, in 2006, he said, "I thought of Zaropa at the time as a work of genius. I really thought our pop discipline was matching our experimentation, and this was our Sergeant Pepper." But he did say, "I was a little bit wrong about that." And but The Edge said, "I never thought of Zaropa as anything more than an interlude." I have to say, I didn't think it was an interlude. I thought it was a bridge.
Oh, it's an amazing album. It rarely comes up. If you were to sit down and talk with other U2 fans, it's not an album that comes up in conversation all that much. This, and maybe albums like Pop and No Line on the Horizon, for me, are sometimes the overlooked U2 albums. Mm. And they're all quite unusual and quite bold artistically. They
instinctive.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, when you're a big band or a big artist, it's quite a risk that you're taking when you go out on a limb like that. And I think they did it best on Zaropa.
Is it your favourite?
Favourite U2 album? It's certainly one of them. It would be top 3.
Yeah, definitely. It's up there for me. Look at me indulging my love of that particular album to get a chance to speak to Dan Hegarty for a whole 20 minutes out of it. But I'm once again reminded that my youthful years are running away. Zaropa, thank you for joining us today, Dan. We are going to take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.